Well, good afternoon, listeners. This is the Dogs Program, and we're here every Saturday, 12 noon, to defend and to promote public education. And as everybody knows, public education has got a big battle in front of it because you might think that the Liberals were pretty bad, but I'm afraid the Labor Party, at both federal and state level, has left a lot to be desired as far as public education supporters are concerned. I mean, when you've had, and we'll be talking about this next week more, when you've had ministers for education going straight from being ministers of education at both the federal and the state level here in Victoria into being heads of the Catholic Education Commission, as soon as they've finished their job as a Minister for Education, I think you've got some idea of where the lobby groups, the powerful lobby groups, and the corruption is in the state of Australia. But we'll be talking about that more next week. For this week, we want to talk about the facts and the figures because the Productivity Commission report is out, and Dale's going to tell us all about that.
Thanks, Jean. This is a press release from the AEU Victoria branch titled "Government Funding Growth Still Stacked Against Public Education." The latest Productivity Commission's report on government services again exposes a deeply unfair school funding system, with government funding growth continuing to favour private schools over public schools despite rising student need. The report shows that private schools are now publicly subsidised to a greater extent than ever before. In 2013 to 2014, private schools received 67.7% of the combined government funding per student than public schools. In 2023 to 2024, this has increased to 70.8%. Private schools have received significantly stronger growth in real government funding than public schools over the past decade, both in total funding and on a per student basis. Combined Commonwealth and state government funding to private schools has grown 30.6% faster than funding to public schools over the last 10 years. This is yet another year where the data shows that private schools continue to receive the lion's share of government funding growth while public schools are being shortchanged, said AEU Federal President Corena Haythorpe. Despite educating the vast majority of students with the highest needs, public schools are falling further behind because governments continue to prioritise funding growth for private schools. Alarmingly, the report also shows that per student government funding for public schools went backwards in the last year, driven by a decline in primary school funding. Funding per primary student fell from $18,942 in 2022-23 to $18,853 in 23-24, while overall recurrent funding per public school student declined for the first time in a decade. When funding per student goes backwards, schools feel it immediately in larger classes, fewer teachers and support staff, and less capacity to meet student needs, Ms. Haythorpe said. This is happening at a time when public schools are educating more than twice the proportion of students from low socio-educational backgrounds, and when the number of students requiring disability adjustments has increased by more than a third in just 4 years. The report confirms that public schools now educate 31.5% of students from low socio-educational backgrounds compared to just 13.7% in private schools, and that 27.2% of public school students required an adjustment for disability in 2024. Public schools are doing the heaviest lifting in education, and it is the teaching profession whose expertise and commitment are the primary reason an underfunded public education system works as effectively as it does, Haythorpe said. The latest data from ROGS shows the inequality between sectors clearly and is a wake-up call to all governments that funding for public education must be urgently prioritised. The lack of funding is putting the teaching profession in crisis with unmanageable workloads, leading to high levels of stress, burnout, and teacher shortages. These issues can all be addressed with proper resourcing. With seven state and territory governments having signed new funding agreements with the Albanese government, we have a unique opportunity to invest in recruitment and retention of teachers, specialists, and education support staff, and to help schools better meet the needs of every child. In a positive development, the report shows that government investment in vocational education and training has increased since 2020, with around 75% of funding directed to TAFE. However, several states have increased the share of funding flow to non-TAFE providers, and total funding paid to non-TAFE providers rose to $1.6 billion in 2024. TAFE has rightly regained a central role in VET, but governments must resist shifting public funding back towards private providers and ensuring TAFE is properly funded as the public provider, Haythorpe said. In Early Childhood Education and Care, ECEC, total government expenditure reached $20.3 billion in 2024-25, with per-child spending increasing nationally, but unevenly across the states. Workforce pressures remain acute, with nearly one in five paid contact staff lacking a relevant ECEC qualification and higher reliance on staffing waivers in remote areas. ECEC funding growth is welcome, but it won't deliver quality outcomes unless it is matched by workforce investment and a stronger public role, said Ms. Haythorpe. Across schools, TAFE and early childhood, the message from this report is clear that equity, workforce capacity, and public provision must be at the centre of government policy. Key facts on total recurrent funding. Commonwealth funding to private schools in 2023-24 is now $6.23 billion per year higher in real terms than a decade ago in 2014-15. Total combined government funding to public schools is $11.1 billion in 2023-24. This is a nominal increase of only 0.2% from 2022-23. Total combined government funding to private schools is now $22.78 billion in 2023-24 and has increased by 44.4% in real terms over the last decade. Governments provide 60.1% of non-government school funding in 2024. Recurrent funding per FTE student. Private schools have received 1,306 times the growth in total recurrent government funding per student that government schools received over the last decade. Each private school student received $15,262 in combined government funding on average in 2023-24. Total recurrent income per student to public schools has declined from last year. Total recurrent funding per FTE student in government schools was $21,550 in 2023-24. This is less than the $21,550 received in 2022-23. Per student funding for primary school students has declined from $18,942 per student in 2022-23 to $18,853 in 2023-24. Private schools are now publicly subsidized to a greater extent than ever before. In 2013-14, private schools received 67.7% of the combined government funding per student than public schools did. By 2023-24, this had increased to 70.8%. Over the last decade, from 2014-15, total per student funding to public schools has increased by 18.6% from $17,540 to $21,550 at an average of 1.9% per year. Commonwealth funding to private schools has increased by 43.2% in real terms on a per student basis over the decade from 2014-15 to 2023-24. Private school per student combined government funding has increased by 24.3% over the past decade at an average of 2.4% per year, a rate 1.3 times the rate of public school increase. This means that combined state, territory and Commonwealth government funding to private schools has grown 30.6% faster than it has for public schools. Public schools educate students with greater needs in 2023. Public schools educate more than twice the proportion of students from low socio-educational background households, 31.5% of students compared to just 13.7% in private schools. The percentage of students from low SEA in public schools has steadily increased from 30.1% a decade ago in 2015. The highest level of disadvantage is in the Northern Territory, 49.1% of public school enrolments, followed by Tasmania, 43.3%, then by Queensland, 34.3%, and New South Wales at 31.6%. 27.2% of public school students required an adjustment due to disability in 2024, an increase more than a third, 34%, from the 20.3% in 2020, compared to the 23% of Catholic school students and 23.4% of independent school students. Among all public school students, Year 12 retention is at 74.3% nationally. It's lowest in the Northern Territory at 61.6% and New South Wales at 67.3%. Year 12 certification for students from low SES backgrounds has declined to 69.7%, down from a peak of 76% in 2016. Teacher-student ratios continue to be higher at public schools, 13 to 1 at public schools compared to 12 to 5 at private schools. In secondary schools, the gap in student-teacher ratio is highest at 12 to 2 in public schools compared to 11 to 2 in private schools. Total government real recurrent expenditure on VET. Total government real recurrent expenditure, including the user cost of capital, in 2024 was $8.85 billion, reflecting a 12% increase from the 2020 figure of $7.74 billion. Total government expenditure per annum hour of VET delivery, when weighing for the cost of course delivery, has increased 18% since 2020. Government VET delivery paid to non-TAFE providers. Total VET delivery funding paid to non-TAFE providers has increased somewhat to $1.6 billion. The Commonwealth proportion of total government VET delivery funding paid to non-TAFE providers was at 19.4% in 2024. This is consistent with previous figures since the Albanese government was elected. Under the previous coalition government, the proportion paid to non-TAFE providers sat at 32.4%. At the state level, Queensland 33% and South Australia 33.5% delivered the highest proportion of total VET funding to non-TAFE providers. Four states have increased their real VET delivering funding paid to non-TAFE providers in 2024. New South Wales with up 1%, Victoria up 5.9%, Queensland up 4.8%, and Western Australia up 21.7%. Now, Early Childhood Education and Care, ECEC. Total government real recurrent expenditure on ECEC was $20.3 billion in 2024-25, a 79% increase since 2015. The Commonwealth accounted for 79.6% of funding, with 20.4% coming from states and territory governments. nearly one in five paid contact staff across ECEC lacked an ECEC-related qualification in 2024, with 9.2% of NGF services utilising staffing waivers. Remote and very remote providers are significantly more likely to be utilising staffing waivers. A lot of facts and figures there, but if you'd like to check it out for yourself, you can go to the AEU Victorian Branch website, and the article is called Government Funding Growth Still Stacked Against Public Education. Back to you, Jean.
Well, look, thank you very much, Dale. The facts and figures are pretty depressing, but I think we need to keep ourselves informed. But let's have a break, shall we? And we'll come back with something from Sorrel.
Are you a 3CR subscriber?
We really need our listeners to subscribe to the station. It helps us remain financially independent and is an important part of our community governance.
It's just $40 concession, $80 waged, $150 for a band or organisation, and $300 solidarity.
Become a 3CR subscriber today.
3CR, Radical Radio.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
3CR programs provide information and analysis you won't hear in the mainstream.
Today we'll be looking at the legacy of the US war on Vietnam on Laos.
And as far as corporate capitalism is concerned, it is the worst political and economic system that you can have.
Our laws about jailing refugees and asylum seekers are so well crafted.
Sex is not irrelevant, and we like who we are, but we don't have to be imprisoned by our gender.
Become a subscriber today. Call us on 9419 8377 or visit 3cr.org.au. 3CR, the voice of dissent.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Yes, well, a lot of teachers, because their salaries aren't all that wonderful, you know, are being priced out of the places where they can teach. Priced out of the classroom. Let's hear about it, shall we?
Thanks, Jean. This article was written by Rachel Power and is entitled Priced Out of the Classroom. A new report shows that the average teacher or education support worker in Victoria can no longer afford to live near their place of work. The Housing Affordability Report, commissioned by the AEU and conducted by the University of New South Wales, reveals the challenges AEU members face in accessing affordable and appropriate housing near their places of work. Not just in rural or hard-to-staff schools, but across metropolitan Melbourne, including some of the most advantaged communities. Access to affordable housing is essential to recruit and retain staff in our public schools. But current market dynamics are failing education workers, and government intervention is urgently needed to address housing affordability and supply. You know, something is seriously wrong when the average teacher cannot afford to live anywhere near their place of work, says AEU Victoria President Justin Mullaly. The state government has an obligation to deliver education to Victorians. That means it has an obligation to staff our public schools. And that means ensuring those employees can access housing. Since when has it been okay for our profession not to be able to afford to purchase a home, let alone rent a property at a reasonable price so you can save for a home loan deposit in a reasonable time frame? You know, something is seriously wrong when the average teacher cannot afford to live anywhere near their place of work. Victorian teachers are the lowest paid in Australia, with salaries failing to keep pace with comparable professions. Principals and support staff are also undervalued. This is contributing significantly to housing stress and undermining workforce stability across the sector. Rising house prices and rental costs are far outpacing wages, especially for graduate teachers and education support, ES, staff, making much of metropolitan and regional Victoria too expensive for school staff to live in. Even principals at the top of the range have been priced out of two key areas of Metro Melbourne. For a top-of-the-scale teacher, a house or unit in metropolitan Melbourne has been seriously or severely unaffordable for more than 15 years. For the past 5 years, a regionally based unit has become largely out of reach. Only 3% of local government areas, LGAs, are affordable for ES workers. Nearly half of all teaching positions are in areas where graduate teachers cannot afford to rent even a one-bedroom flat. And around 4,400 available positions are in locations where affordable housing is out of reach for families. Long commutes take a toll on well-being, productivity, and staff retention. There is also an equity issue. Women, who make up the majority of the teaching and education support workforce, are disproportionately affected by housing instability, while First Nations employees across all roles experience greater rates of housing insecurity than the broader population. Government must develop strategies that make it possible for school staff to live in reasonable proximity to their workplace so they can have a decent work-life balance, says Justin. Our members already face a high volume of unpaid overtime. Their daily workload, alongside meeting their family obligations, is demanding enough without adding a 90-minute commute and the acute stress of struggling to pay their rent or mortgage. School staff are essential workers. They deserve a dedicated housing scheme, much like the Defence Force and public sector accommodation schemes, that ensure school staff can live near their workplaces and access pathways to home ownership. Housing is not just a welfare issue. It's a strategic investment in public services and infrastructure. Based on the report's findings, the AEU is calling on state government to make housing a core component of workforce planning, and to back this commitment with a serious policy reform and investment. Victoria is facing critical workforce shortages in the schooling sector, with demands for teachers projected to outstrip supply by 2029. High rental costs, low vacancy rates, a lack of supply, and barriers to home ownership are contributing to these shortages, particularly affecting graduate teachers and ES staff who are critical to the sustainability of the public education system. We are facing critical workforce shortages now and into the future, says Justin. But without affordable housing near schools, even the best recruitment initiatives will fail. Compounding the issue, workforce planning typically overlooks geographic distribution, focusing instead on overall supply and demand. Not surprisingly, the data shows that areas with low workforce residency largely correspond to the most unaffordable housing markets. The union's recommendations call for multi-pronged, long-term, evidence-based solutions to address housing shortages and affordability for public school employees, involving financial incentives, infrastructure investment, and ownership pathways. Modelling shows every dollar invested in affordable housing returns $2 in direct value through improved workforce retention, education outcomes, and community stability, with long-term economic and social benefits predicted to be much higher. Recommendations include stamp duty exemptions, rental subsidies, build-to-rent incentives, and shared equity schemes. The AEU is also calling for investment in housing developments, specifically poor public education workers in high-demand areas, and top of the list, significantly higher salaries to help address the widening gap between incomes and housing costs. Some of the key recommendations are significantly increase the salaries of the public education workforce, boost investment in quality housing supply for Victoria's public school employees and establish a public school staff housing division within the Department of Education, make significant investments to create pathways to home ownership for public school employees, introduce rental subsidies to attract and support employees in areas of high workforce demand and limited access to affordable housing. Introduce a stamp duty exemption for eligible school employees. Now, back over to you, Jean.
Well, thank you very much, Sorrel. It's of no surprise, of course, that the public school staff are very annoyed and they are going to stop work on the 24th of March. Let's hear about it from Amby.
Thanks, Jean. Public school staff to stop work on the 24th of March. And this is a press release from the Australian Education Union on the 13th of February. Public school staff to stop work on the 24th of March if Allan government continues to deny fair pay and conditions. The Australian Education Union's Primary and Secondary Sector Council has set a date for a 24-hour stop work action in Term 1. Public school teachers, principals and education support staff are being disrespected by the Allan Labor government, who have failed to put any offer to resolve key issues of pay and workload despite many months of negotiations. The stop work, planned for 24th of March, would be the first time in more than 13 years that public school staff have taken this step. Australian Education Union Victorian Branch President Justin Mullaly said the decision was not taken lightly. The Allan Labor government has deliberately denied Victorian public schools $2.4 billion in funding through to 2031, continuing to make the Victorian schools the lowest funded in Australia by a long way. Public school teachers, education support and school leaders' salaries have fallen significantly behind other states and territories, and excessive workload continues to increase, with school staff working an average of 12 hours unpaid overtime per week, Mr. Mullaly said. It is a joke for this government to call Victoria the education state while disrespecting and undervaluing public school teachers, principals and education support staff. By October 2026, teachers will be earning as much as $15,359 a year, $295 per week, less than their New South Wales counterparts. A classroom-based education support employer starting out would be 10.5% behind, and a Victorian school principal new to the role would start $27,841 or 18% behind. In the middle of a chronic shortage of school staff, it is not possible to retain experienced, dedicated teachers, principals and support staff in the public school system and attract the next generation when they are being underpaid and overworked, Mr. Mullaly said. The Premier and Education Minister ought to know that Victorian students are set up for success when their teachers, principals and education support staff are supported to stay in the profession. We have been negotiating in good faith with the Allan Labor government to deliver the salaries and conditions that school staff need. Their failure to come to the table with an offer is downright disrespectful. To make matters worse, in December, the Victorian government signed an agreement with the Australian government that left Victorian public schools the lowest funded in the nation and funded at the same level as in 2023. This is completely unacceptable and breaks Premier Allan's promise to fully and fairly fund our schools, Mr. Mullaly said. Premier Allan and her government continue to deny public school staff the pay and conditions they need, and to deny every Victorian public school student the resources they require. It is time for the Premier to step up and deliver for public school staff, students and their families. The AEU is currently undertaking a ballot of union members on whether to take protected industrial action. If endorsed, a 24-hour statewide stop work will be held on the 24th of March, unless the government puts an offer which addresses union members' key claims about pay and conditions. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thank you, Andy. And now we're going overseas with Jeff. Now, we are going to America. We're going to Texas. But this is a very, very interesting interview done on YouTube, because the Democrat that we'll be hearing from was banned as being having his own views, apparently, on television by Mr. Trump. But he's got tremendous support, and we're putting him on because we are against the public funding of private religious schools, and we are for separation of church and state. Now, this man is pro-public education, and he is also a secularist, even though he's a Presbyterian seminarian. Extraordinary it is, and it does the heart good to hear his arguments for the separation of religion from the state.
Good afternoon, listeners. We're going to talk about CBS, the network in the United States, that's been pressured by the Trump administration via the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, Brendan Carr, to take Stephen Colbert and The Late Show with Stephen Colbert off the air. And that has happened a few months ago. Colbert was given until May, and the show will be finally finishing up. This is the one that occurs in the Ed Sullivan Theatre and is the number one show rating in the United States for apparently political bias. Now, before he's closed down, Colbert sought to interview a Democratic Senate candidate from Texas who's had massive support rising in Texas, and turns out the Trump administration is absolutely dreadfully worried about losing in the midterm elections in November. So they have issued, Brendan Carr from the FCC, he's the Trump administration figurehead, has said he's planning to disable the ability of public broadcasting to hold what they call political biased interviews. And as a result of this memo that was issued by Brendan Carr, CBS has responded by banning Colbert from broadcasting an interview with James Tallarico, who's the Democratic Senate candidate in Texas. This has happened last week. In defiance of this, Colbert has issued the interview on YouTube, and we plan to give you a little listen to some of the parts of that interview coming up, because Tallarico is a strong advocate of public education in Texas and has been involved in several points of resistance against religious dominance or religious interference in state education down there. And which is interesting because he himself is a Presbyterian seminarian. Anyway, with that, I'll let you have a listen to that. And just after that, we'll be going to Vanuatu. Why not?
Ladies and gentlemen, joining me now is a representative in the Texas State House who is currently running for the United States Senate. Please welcome to the Late Show YouTube page, Representative James Tallarico. There you go.
Thank you.
Now, here's the thing. I don't usually say this to a guest, but if people are watching this right now, it's because they found us online, on YouTube. I did an act of the show that's on tonight explaining why. It's not the first time you've caused some drama. FCC opening probe into The View after appearance by Tallarico. Do you mean to cause trouble?
I think that Donald Trump is worried that we're about to flip Texas. And Stephen, this is the party that ran against cancel culture, and now they're trying to control what we watch, what we say, what we read, and this is the most dangerous kind of cancel culture, the kind that comes from the top. They went after The View because I went on there. They went after Jimmy Kimmel for telling a joke they didn't like. They went after you for telling the truth about Paramount's bribe to Donald Trump. Corporate media executives are selling out the First Amendment to curry favor with corrupt politicians. And a threat to any of our First Amendment rights is a threat to all of our First Amendment rights. So I'm just
to fact check you, my network said our cancellation was a purely financial decision.
Got it.
And
yes.
I remain very grateful for the last 11 years. Now, you grew up in Texas.
I did.
You served in the Texas House, and now you're running for Senate. The race, frankly, should not be as interesting as it is. Donald Trump won Texas by 14%. Why do you think this year Texas is considered a possibility by Democrats?
Well, I'm an 8th-generation Texan. My family has been in our state since it was Mexico. And across...
So you're going to get deported is what you're saying.
Across the state, there is a backlash growing to the extremism and the corruption in our politics. And I have traveled every corner of Texas already, from El Paso to Beaumont, from Amarillo to Brownsville. And we've had thousands of Texans showing up to rally with us. And I can't tell you the number of people who come up to me at the end of these events and whisper, I'm not a Democrat, like it's some kind of secret. And and we've recruited 14,000 volunteers who are out there doing the work all over our state. This is one of the most exciting parts. We have shattered grassroots fundraising records, all without taking a dime from corporate PACs. And so this is really a people-powered movement to take back our state and take back our country. And I feel like we're building something really special in Texas. And clearly, Donald Trump has taken note.
Now, one of the things that's come up in some of the conversations you've had on the Texas State House floor, which some of the videos I've seen you do, and one of the things that's gotten you attention out there, is that you are a Presbyterian seminarian. Presently?
Yes.
You're a seminarian?
Yes.
Okay. The right attempts to co-opt Christianity. To say that, you know, you can't believe in God, you can't believe in Christ. I think that Donald Trump might have said something like that at the National Prayer Breakfast. Like, you can't actually be a Christian and be a Democrat. But the religious right is it's largely a political movement.
That's right.
That references spirituality, but it's a political. What is your heartfelt hand out to the people who want to use religion as a tool of political power?
Well, for 50 years, the religious right, a political movement, that is the perfect description for it, they convinced a lot of our fellow Christians that the most important issues were abortion and gay marriage. Two issues that aren't mentioned in the Bible, two issues that Jesus never talked about. Jesus, in Matthew 25, tells us exactly how you and I and every one of our fellow believers, how we're going to be judged and how we're going to be saved. By feeding the hungry, by healing the sick, by welcoming the stranger. Nothing about going to church, nothing about voting Republican. It was all about how you treat other people. Don't. I've said before, don't tell me what you believe. Show me how you treat other people, and I'll tell you what you believe. And I think in our faith, we've got to get back to those fundamentals. My granddad was a Baptist preacher in South Texas. And when I was little, he told me that Christianity is a simple religion. Not an easy religion, he would always clarify, but a simple religion because Jesus gave us two commandments, love God and love neighbor. And there was no exception to that second commandment. Love thy neighbor regardless of race or gender or sexual orientation or immigration status or religious affiliation. And it's why I have fought so hard for the separation of church and state in the state capitol in Texas, because...
Well, I want to ask you about that.
Yeah, please.
Because you did, as a state rep, you fought against the a bill requiring the Ten Commandments to be displayed in schools.
That's right.
Why, even on that level, do you think it's important to keep the separation, not just for the state, but for the church?
Well, because we are called to love all of our neighbors, including our Muslim, Jewish, Buddhist, Hindu, Sikh, agnostic, atheist neighbors, and forcing our religion down their throats is not love. And it's why I have fought... It's why I fought so hard for that sacred separation in our First Amendment, because my granddad, he raised me to believe that that boundary between church and state doesn't just benefit the state or our democracy, although it certainly does, but it also benefits the church. Because when the church gets too cozy with political power, it loses its prophetic voice, its ability to speak truth to power, its ability to imagine a completely different world. And so this separation between church and state is something we have to safeguard. It's something we have to fight for. And I think we need someone in the U.S. Senate who is going to confront Christian nationalism and say and tell the truth, which is that there is nothing Christian about Christian nationalism. It is the worship of power in the name of Christ. And it is a betrayal of Jesus of Nazareth. And I just want to thank you, Stephen, because I know you're not a politician, but you have really shown people in this country what Christianity should be and what it means to actually live out the teachings of Jesus, even in a talk show.
Well, I'm going to push back a little bit on that. That's very nice of you to say. I would never lay that compliment to myself, because I think I fall far short of what my standards would be. But I will agree with you on this. I think that it is bad for certainly my church or any religious organization to associate themselves from a political party. Right. How must it diminish God to be associated with something so small as a present political party?
That's right.
Because imagine this. Imagine that you managed to co-opt Christianity. Imagine if you managed to convince everybody that Jesus was on your side. If you then lose the election, sounds like you've got a pretty weak Jesus.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's the key, is you don't want to fit the big thing into the small thing. Mm-hmm. And God is the biggest thing there is. And so to try to fit God into a political party, whether it's the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, you've got it reversed. Mm-hmm. And so it's why I think we have to remember to put those big things first, to put the love of God and the love for our neighbors before anything else. Because right now, what you've got is people baptizing their partisanship and calling that Christianity, when in reality, your politics should grow out of your faith, not the other way around.
Now, you're serving in Texas House of Representatives. You've had your fair share of strange days. I understand you had to weigh in on legislation about, and I hope I'm reading this correctly, furries.
I did.
Now, I know what furries are. Is that the same furries that I
yes,
do not use my work computer yes. to search for?
That's right. Yeah, when I ran for public office, I never thought I'd be talking about furries in this job. But my Republican colleagues in the state legislature, they were promoting an internet hoax that Texas public school students were identifying as cats.
Yes.
And
I heard
and
the
that,
story.
Yes,
I read the story.
And that the schools were providing litter boxes to those students. I know.
My understanding is it's not just Texas, it's everywhere in the United States.
It's an epidemic.
Biden signed a law that
yeah,
that
yeah,
had to happen.
Yes, forcing litter boxes in every classroom.
Yeah. Yes.
Anyway, they decided to write a bill to combat this completely made-up problem, and it fell to me as a member of the Public Education Committee to question the author of that bill. And so I just asked him a pretty simple question. Has there been a single documented case of a school providing a litter box to students? And he couldn't name one. And this video went everywhere. You can look it up online.
So the law was working.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right. He actually yes. kind of said something similar to that.
Yeah.
His response was that this law is to prevent that from ever happening.
Oh, I understand.
Which I guess
sure.
that's true. Yeah. But anyway, there is a point to this craziness. They want us talking about furries and bathrooms so we don't realize that they are picking our pockets, that they are closing our schools, they are gutting our health care, and they are raising taxes on all of us while they cut taxes for their billionaire donors. The culture wars are a smokescreen, because the real fight in this country is not left versus right, it's top versus bottom. Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much for being here. Thanks for being the first guest to ever appear only on YouTube.
I'm honored. Thank you.
Representative James Tallarico, everybody.
I hope you enjoyed that, folks. It's very important things going on in the States. Now, Vanuatu. This article came from the Education International, which is an international union organization. The title of the article is Vanuatu, Teacher Union Embraces Global Call to Go Public and Fund Education. And the article begins, advocating for increased and sustained public investment in education to strengthen the teaching profession and improve learning outcomes, the Vanuatu Teachers Union, VTU, has launched the Education International, EI, Go Public Fund Education campaign nationwide. It emphasised the need for the government to invest in teachers through fair remuneration, quality professional development and supportive working conditions. Through this initiative, VTU acknowledged the critical role of public education as a public good and urged the government of Vanuatu to prioritise education financing to address teacher shortages, workload pressures and resource gaps, particularly in rural and remote schools. Setting up the Education Services Commission is a headline. VTU also highlighted that their campaign aligns with recommendation 5 of the United Nations on the teaching profession. Governments should establish national commissions or other mechanisms which should include relevant financial authorities, representatives of teachers' organisations and other relevant stakeholders to assess and tackle shortages of adequately trained teachers. Such commissions or mechanisms should address labour market analyses, recruitment, teacher migration, attrition and retention, compensation, status and rights, workload and well-being, equity, including the ratio of qualified teachers to students, equality and infrastructure. In her remarks, Nelisenda Mehta, Secretary General of the Council of Pacific Education, COPE, COPE, and EI, Education International Asia Pacific Regional Coordinator, insisted that the Education Services Commission is essential for strengthening the governance and accountability of the teacher sector, ensuring fairness in recruitment, appointments and promotions, protecting and improving teachers' rights, welfare and working conditions, reducing political interference and ensuring decisions are made with professionalism and integrity, and supporting quality education for all children in Vanuatu. This reform is not just structural, she said. It is foundational to the future of our nation. Addressing the teachers across Vanuatu, she also explained that the Education Services Commission is about empowering you, protecting your rights, and ensuring your career is guided by merit, fairness, and transparency. Joining Education International, Go Public, Fund Education campaign. The launch in Vanuatu marked an important step in linking national education advocacy with global commitments to transform the teaching profession and strengthen public education systems. With the presence of key leaders from the Ministry of Education and Training, MOET, the Teaching Services Commission, TSC, the Council of Pacific Education, COPE, the sub-branch of Education International Asia Pacific Region, and other educational stakeholders, VTU officially launched the campaign on January 30th, 26, on the island of Santo. Mrs. Mehta stated that Go Public is a global movement calling on governments worldwide to recognise that funding public education is urgent and must be a priority. Across the world, public schools are under pressure from chronic underfunding, teacher shortages and increased inequality. EI's call urges governments to shift their priorities from cost-cutting to nation-building and from temporary fixes to long-term investments in teachers, students and communities. This campaign reinforces a simple truth. Quality education is not a privilege, it's a human right that must be protected, strengthened and properly funded. At a regional level, the Pacific stands at a critical moment, she also reported, with global teacher shortages becoming one of the most urgent crises of our time. Go Public Fund Education, led by Educational International and the Council of Pacific Education, provides a bold and strategic response. This multi-year program strengthens the capacity of unions across Fiji, Papua New Guinea, Samoa, Solomon Islands and Vanuatu, aligning with the United Nations recommendations and sustainable development goals. It positions teachers not only as educators but as nation builders, climate leaders and champions for justice, while reinforcing the need for resilient, inclusive and well-resourced public schools. She added that this campaign resonates powerfully with Vanuatu's own national realities. When Education International calls on governments to go public fund education, it reflects the lived experiences of our teachers, overcrowded classrooms, limited resources, delayed appointments, and the ongoing struggle for fairness and respect. Our participation in the Pacific Movement, including the 25 Regional National Gallery in Nadi, strengthens our advocacy and gives us international backing as we push for systemic reform, including the establishment of a fully functional Education Services Commission. Through this campaign, Vanuatu joins millions of teachers worldwide in affirming that every child deserves a qualified teacher and every teacher deserves respect, support and recognition. General Secretary went on emphasising that progress requires unity. No single institution can drive education reform alone. We must stand together, school leaders and communities. When we speak with one national voice, we can achieve lasting reform. Let today be a reminder that we share a common vision, a stronger, fairer and more professional education system for Vanuatu. The COPE leader concluded, "Today's launch marks the beginning of a new chapter in our nation's educational journey, a chapter of hope, transformation and empowerment. Let's move forward with determination. Let's support our teachers. Let's work together to make the Education Services Commission a reality." And with that, I'm going to send you back to the headquarters of the Dogs and wish you well. Cheerio.
Well, look, thank you, Jeff, for finding that. But shall we have a break and come back for our great state school?
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Over five decades, we've been home to hundreds of shows, thousands of broadcasters and guests, and hundreds of thousands of listeners.
This February, we're aiming for 1,000 subscribers.
It's just $40 concession, $80 full.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
Well, we hope you're still listening to the Dogs because this is the best part of the program. We're going to tell you about our great state school.
Every week on the Dogs program, we have a special segment to show a different state school is a great school.
State schools are great
schools. School of the week. State school.
School of the week.
Great state schools.
State schools. School of the week. School for the week here on the Dogs program.
And this week's great state school of the week is South Melbourne Primary School. At South Melbourne Primary School, every person is significant. Our educational philosophy supports every child to be safe, happy, connected, and achieving in order to achieve our vision of inspiring hearts and minds to thrive. We achieve strong academic outcomes in the essential skills of literacy and numeracy by using evidence-based approaches. We proactively teach and support social and emotional wellness in every year level. Our school values are character, community, and learning. We believe in developing emotional and social intelligence in staff and students alike. We believe that people thrive when connected to each other and have a sense of a larger purpose in life. We also believe that every child should be literate and numerate and curious about the world we live in. Context challenges. South Melbourne Primary School is located in the city of Port Phillip in the southern suburbs of Melbourne, approximately 2 kilometres from the Melbourne Central Business District. The school was founded in 2018. It is the first vertical school in Victoria and has learning spaces over 6 levels. Enrolments at the time of the school strategic plan creation were approximately 434 students. Over the past 4 years, enrolments increased by over 200 students. The school offers an explicit direct instruction model across all year levels. The specialist learning program includes performing arts, visual arts, physical education, and Mandarin. The school offers out-of-school hours care run by an external provider. Extracurricular activities provided during school hours include instrumental music lessons and soccer lessons. A number of other activities are offered adjacent to the school day, including engineering and sporting clubs. The school employs a speech therapist. The growth of the school has required the appointment of many new staff. This has been a challenge with processes and systems for inducting staff requiring significant leadership attention and professional learning. And now some facts and figures from the My School website. The enrolment, 502. And the ICSEA value, well above average, at 1,144. Representative of a diverse inner city community. The upper 25% of parental income makes up 59% of students, 26% of students in the second level of parental incomes, the third quartile of parental incomes make up 10% of students, and 5% of students have parents in the lowest quartile of incomes, with 71% having a language background other than English and 1% Indigenous students. The finances: recurrent grants from the Australian Government of $1.5 million and from the Victorian Government, $5.6 million. Private fees and contributions add another $625,000 and other private contributions, $281,000. and that comes to $16,225 per pupil. The capital, $1.2 million over 3 years. The NAPLAN results, outstanding. This is a school doing an amazing job on very basic funding. Back to you, Jean.
Well, congratulations to South Melbourne Primary School. It's a public school that we're very proud of indeed. The results in NAPLAN are off the charts, so there's some extraordinary teaching going on down there. But our time is gone, and it's up to me now to thank our wonderful producer Dale and her offsiders, Sorrel and Andy and Jeff, and from all of us here at 3CR. We hope that you will look further on 3CR, and if you want to hear more about the dogs, you can go to the 3CR website and look at our podcasts, or you can go to our website at www.adogs.info. But from all of us here at the dogs, it is bye for now.
I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die, says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find. I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
Being a 3CR subscriber is vitally important to keeping us community controlled, grassroots and on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Every 3CR show is a progressive voice that enriches and informs our communities.
From gardening and music to current affairs and First Nations voices, we broadcast expert community knowledge, offering perspectives beyond the mainstream media.
Subscribe today to be part of community-owned and community-controlled media.
Show your solidarity. Subscribe.
Go to 3cr.org.au or call 9419 8377.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We rely on the financial support of listeners like yourself to keep going. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au. And thanks for your support.